Hi, my name is Tess Vismel. This is the Event Tech Pull-Up, and we are elated to have you with us today via video as well as audio. And we thank you for those of you who have been following us through this time since March, and hopefully that you'll continue to share our show with your tribe. I'm again with iSocialX, which is really truly iSocial Execution, and now is the time for me to bring up my partner in crime.
Keith Johnston with i3 Events and PlannerWire.
Thank you. Thank you. Look at that, guys. After all this time, there's no beat in between. He didn't love us or anything. And he admitted that he is the infamous PlannerWire. Because you know that's a little ninja. No one really kind of knows who he is. Kind of does. He shakes it up and all of that.
Yeah, but I only pop in like once every like 6 months now and just like drop a...
Right, exactly.
And walk away.
Exactly. So we are always having fun. Our goal and our mission for this show is really truly to shed light on event technology from all angles. We'd like to make sure that people get educated and feel that they have a comfortable space to ask questions around the event technology, but then also the smaller boys, not necessarily always the bigger players, and being able to have a place where we can share what we know a little bit about it. Right, Keith?
Yeah. You know, you want to just impart some knowledge without any BS.
Yeah, pretty much. And feel comfortable around it. Keith and I are really chill, very laid back. Most of you already know, our goal and our mission is to demystify, and that's what we always try to do. So we wanted to take this time today for our audience to kind of what Keith knows and platforms that I've had recently, it's all about respecting the pause. So we want to take a pause and talk about two things that are near to and dear to us. Keith, you want to let them know what we're going to talk about today?
I do. Because right now, in the United States and globally, we face two pandemics. One is the most recent of the two, or the one that we'll say started most recently, and that is COVID-19, the coronavirus, which right now is still blazing across the globe. It has killed it's infected over 2 million people. Here in the United States, it has killed over 133,000 that we know of, which is a big deal. The second pandemic that we face has actually been around for a millennia, and that is the systemic racism. That here, the most recent thing that has happened here is the killing of George Floyd by the Minneapolis Police Department. And again, that is a pandemic as well. So those are the two things that we are going to talk about today.
Yeah, thanks, Keith. I mean, I think it's very appropriate for us to do it. Everyone has come out black. Out Tuesday was last Tuesday, where people, as well as companies and institutions, decided to take a stance. And again, as I call it, respect the pause. I didn't even realize that my little term would come to play. But I wanted to share with everyone a statement from Keith and I, and kind of our positioning as well. So, it really amuses us to see so many people and companies get caught up in the media and think that it's a safe time to gather. As humans, it's not time. It's not to mention our industry has made decisions, people, entities have made decisions to move their events to next year. Some of them decided to go ahead and open up in the fall. And it's created a sense of shame and that angst that people can go through with, like, oh my gosh, my organization is deciding to do this. What actually am I supposed to do? I personally don't feel like I should be able to go outside yet, but I'm forced to because my business is doing it. My association is doing it. So therefore I need to go ahead and follow suit. So there's a lot of fear that comes along with it. I know Keith, and Keith and I have talked about it several times, that we didn't think things should go back into at least second or third quarter of next year. And when it's not really a go back, it's just a where you're able to re-enter what we're calling the new normal time. And if you look at it, that will be 12 months, right? Whether we may or may not have a vaccine, people should be concerned about that. But it's unfortunately that fear alone will now allow people to gather in a way that the industry, you know, would support the face-to-face, right?
Yeah, and you know, when you look at COVID-19 and you look at the meetings and events industry, and you know, the post I wrote on Planner Wire a few weeks ago was basically that, you know, it was my hope that the post, when I wrote it, it was about, you know, we needed to act or we needed to get together because that this is actually going to leave a smoking crater where the events industry used to be. And it is. And the fact is, this is a slow moving disaster, right? I am a science guy, right? You cannot rush back. You know, I love the people that get out there and go, well, if I get COVID, it's fine. Well, it's not about you. It's about the fact that if you get it, you're going to give it to somebody's grandmother, which I never, right? Or you could give it to someone's infant, right? It's the vulnerable populations that we all have to get together and protect, right? You know, when you look at, you know, animals in the wild, right? The big strong ones get in a big circle to protect the weaker ones in the middle. And that is what we need to do. And in order to do that, we can't be putting 100,000 people in a convention center. And when I say that, knowing that that is true, and it kills my business, but I know it's true, right? You know, when CES came out, I think, you know, a week or so ago, and said that they're moving forward in January, I'm like, really? You're going to bring 200,000 people from around the world, and you're going to cram them into an itty bitty little space where they're all coughing and sneezing and touching stuff, right? Because it's consumer electronics. So these are, right? The nature of it is to touch it, right? You know, I've got my iPad right here giving me notes.
And you know, as a technologist, right? And we would hope that they're going to rely on some sort of hybrid experiences around that and look to technology to help people realize that. How are these tech companies developing things where people can touch where they are instead of necessarily touching face to face? I think it'll be interesting time for that. But January, that's a lot for a very tight time frame. Even those who are trying to go back in the fall, not even necessarily considering that COVID was like the tip off, right? It was just the kickoff, right? And everything that came after that is really around the changes that need to go on globally, sure. Right? It's not about us. And this is the perfect time for people. That's why I was so excited when we sheltered in place, because then people could stop, pause, and kind of look at life differently. And rushing to put people back outside into an environment that became very pure. The air was pure. Oh. The bugs were bigger. The animals were roaming around in places and being free. And
I live in Chicago, and the lack of air ick is spectacular.
It was wonderful. And then when they were like, yeah, you can go. And I live in Georgia. That's enough said.
Humid and pollution.
And I live in Atlanta, which houses the CDC. And for some reason, somebody said we can go back. Anyway, so at the point they went back, you could feel the grit and the grime coming back. You could feel the contamination coming back. And it's just not been a good process.
No, sorry, but, you know, I don't think that most people do get this, but even if they come up with an effective treatment or a vaccine tomorrow, you've got to ramp that up.
It's not a light switch where it just goes on and off. I mean, I'm in the Northern Lights right now, right? This is why I chose to come to this space. So hopefully those who are watching and those who are listening don't know that, but my background is the Northern Lights. Realize it is bigger than us. Yeah. This is not about us individually.
It is, I mean, global supply chains on anything that they come up with, I mean, you're talking months to roll it out to get it to Fargo, North Dakota, right? Right. By the time it gets there, right? I mean, you're talking 6 months from now.
Right.
You know, right. Smaller towns, you know, look at, somewhere in Siberia or in far down in Lima, Peru. It's going to take a while for these things to circulate across the globe. And until that point, cramming all these people into itty bitty little boxes and little tubes to fly around just probably isn't the smartest thing to do.
No. And then, I mean, we look at it, like we just talked about the the millennia of the pandemic that has had, you know, that has occurred around systemic racism and the fallout that has been triggered in the last couple weeks with George Floyd's actual lynching and murder. We realize that those people subjected themselves by choice, of course, to go out and make a statement and say that this might not be the best way of doing things and handling things, and I'm tired, right? And move past that point. So you got to react to it, right? And yep. You're going to realize that there are cases that have come up around it as well. I think that regardless of what, how you think people should have acted or should have been acting during the protest, proves we might not have been ready to go back into a situation where we, as business event strategists and professionals, would want to put people into a situation that they may or may not be comfortable with. Let's look at, those are thousands of people, right? Same things as thousands of people in conventions, right? I'm saying in terms of numbers wise, you still have to organize the traffic. You need to do a lots of logistics around that, right? Are you hiring extra people? Is it an entire logistics team that's going to actually work on just what that flow of traffic looks like that's on, that you're paying on top of the quote unquote regular staff that you used to have? They have new positions. What kind of technology are you going to put in place to run all the logistics on site, which, you know, is the thing that I love. There are all kinds of questions that go into that, right?
Yes, ma'am.
And that showed that people will choose to do whatever they want, how they want, but then how do we bring back some sort of flow of traffic, some sort of protection, and what kind of risks are we taking? So,
well, and I think I talked about this on an earlier episode, but I don't know if you've seen the video from the Palm Springs, I think it's the Palm Springs Convention Center, but they did their, you know, how they're going to be rolling back, bringing back events, right? And it's methodical, right? They've done a great job. The video shows what a great job they've done. They've thought it through. Okay, this is how people are going to move through food lines, right? This is how this is how they're going to get their food. This is how they'll be sitting if it was a banquet. And, you know, how do you keep people socially distanced, right? There was thought that went into that opening plan, right? And again, it's just one small convention center in a small spot, but they did, they put the right thought into it, you know. But when you look at big events that again are just like, okay, we're going, let's open up, it's going to be great. You know, what is the liability of that? Mm-hmm. Right. If you're an association and you send 2,000 people and 1,000 of them get it, right? You know, I get it. You don't control the coronavirus. I absolutely understand that. But are you liable because you cram them all in a little room?
Right. And I totally agree. And I think that that's very progressive. And matter of fact, that's what I would expect for a convention center to work along and show opportunities and different creative ways of redesigning and reimagining your events. Right. But then I'm in groups of meeting planners that say that their convention centers and hotels that keep talking to them about regular business as if it's regular and not even sent them plans around what could be, what they actually were thinking about, right?
I have clients, I am doing events all the way out to 2021, 2022. And to be honest, to be 100% honest, dealing with convention centers, hotels, and CVBs right now is like a shit show. It absolutely is. No one has, you know, again, Palm Springs did, but, you know, other folks, they don't have plans. You're writing to them and you're not getting a response. You know, and I get people are furloughed. I get it. Right. But they don't even have a plan to how to deal with their own furloughs. So, right, like who's going to be answering the messages? Right. So if you can't even do something that simple, how can I have faith that when my attendees go there, they're going to be safe? If you can't even answer a freaking message. Yeah. look at that. I stepped on that nerve.
I love it. I love it. That's what we do. We do it all the time. So Keith, I want to share with the audience a couple of quotes if I can, and that will hopefully set the tone and kind of get a sense and a feel of some of the things that were actually happening out there, and that reminded me of a time where, you know, coming as a young woman growing up in Chicago, actually, and looking at, you know, the experiences that I've had. My family was very, very active in the civil rights movement and before, because my parents actually were born during the Depression in the 20s and 25 and 27. So my mother had me at 42, so my experiences are a little different than others. I was very rooted in Black life. I was very rooted in the history of our culture from the beginning. You know, I went to Blackstone Theater. I was very cultured. I went to tons of museums in Chicago, which was a wonderful, wonderful experience. My mom and my dad were volunteers with, at that time, Operation Breadbasket, which was with Reverend Jesse Jackson, which became Operation Push, which now is Rainbow Push Coalition. Very active with him, grew up with his children. So I know what it means. My favorite writer, Keith, as a kid, I saw, and actually it was at the Blackstone Theater, I do believe. I saw Jesse B. Simple, which was Simply Heavenly, was the name of the play. I'll never forget it. And it was by Langston Hughes. And when I saw that play as a young girl, because I left Chicago when I was 11, my parents moved. So you imagine, I must have been 8 or 9 when I saw that play. At that moment, he became my favorite writer. You know, my mom went to school with Martin. She went to Spelman, and he was at Morehouse at the same time. And I'll tell you little stories about how they dated through the gate and at the library for brief periods of time. So the origins of writers and my Blackness runs through my veins. However, I also have an idea of what life should be like around human beings and how humans should interact with each other. It just is. So another one of my favorite writers, James Baldwin, has a quote called, and he says, "To act is to be committed, and to be committed is to be dangerous." And what does that mean? That means we just talked about how they risk their lives to go out around a cause that they believed in of some unrest. And people have done that, as you say, for millennia. People have stood up, but it's about risk and danger. You know, we as business event professionals, how are we going to take that risk and put certain things we believe in a dangerous position? It might be dangerous for me as task as a meeting plan to fly in to see where I'm going to even create a hybrid situation, whether I can have a virtual tour or not. If it's hybrid, it's still hybrid. So there's some sort of components of that. You know, are my budgets larger so I can have someone on the ground to do it? How do I take the risk there? But if we don't take the time to think about what our current problems are as human beings, we're going to have a challenge and a problem. The other thing I'd like to say is that there's another quote by a gentleman, Dr. Eddie Glaude Jr. He's chairman of the African American Studies Department at Princeton, CNN correspondent as well, and author, of course, because as a doctor, you have to be an author and show your works. But he says, in order to address the cultural practice of racial inequality, we have to narrate America differently. We have to confront the ugliness of who we are and who we have been so that we can imagine ourselves otherwise. Right. So when you're talking about imagining yourself otherwise, and you got to recognize that there's ugliness, right? You have to acknowledge that and recreate we talk about how technology lets us reimagine our events. We talk about how we have the power as business event strategists, planners, and event technologists to help our clients reimagine their experiences for their audiences, streamline processes. But that still, even in our process, what does that say, Keith? That says we got to understand the ugliness in what they do. You get frustrated around registration data all the time. That's ugliness, right? It still transcends. And if we don't have a individual acceptance that we may be making some decisions that might not be inclusive or might not look at point of views from a broad perspective, then I think we might have missed the point.
And you have to always be working on it, right? You know, if we put it in the context of an event, like you said, right, I'm always looking to streamline registration. I'm always looking to reinvent the web experience to make it better for the end user. Absolutely. And I think we need to do that every day. You know, I'm a very fortunate guy, right? You know, I grew up in rural Connecticut. However, my town was a college town, right? So I didn't get the biases that come from only being around people like me, right? You know, from the time I went to my first, you know, swim team, which was actually on the campus of the University of Connecticut, you know, there were African-American folks, there were folks from Africa, there were folks from China, Hong Kong.
And that's the beauty of academia.
Right.
Around it as well. That's the beauty of it.
You know, eight years old, and I didn't know it then, but one of the kids who shared that was on my swim team, was his parents were from Turkey. Right. And it never dawned on me until years later that he was probably Muslim. Right. So again, you know, I get that you can grow up and you can see the world a certain way, but I think that it's inherent in everyone to broaden your horizons. I think as event professionals, we're extremely lucky in that you travel. We travel. If you travel, you cannot have the prejudices that you just can't.
You
right?
should because, not.
Well, have. You shouldn't.
We but, observe them all the time.
You know, it's really funny. You know,
you would think that exposure would help.
Yeah, you know, I've been to Mexico 100 million times. You know, it is a beautiful culture. They're wonderful people. I love to go strolling through the streets there. Right. When I go to, you know, I have spent time in Nairobi. Right. It's cool as hell. And the people are spectacular.
Yeah.
Right. And you only get that by actually going out and talking to people.
Yeah. You know, instead of staying in your hotel room and.
Right.
That's yeah, and, it. Being shuttled.
And I guess I've always sought out people that were different than me. Right. I mean, just hanging out with the same people is boring.
Right. I mean, yeah, I do. I mean, everyone knows that I have such a broad range of friends, experiences. And one thing that I don't compromise is authenticity at all. And people have to be authentic in themselves.
Yes.
You know, not only did this force us to stay inside, it should have forced us to look within and say, hey, what can I do better and how can I do better, right? And then with this layer of what I call a civil flush of evil, if I should say, you know, because we're just flushing out. And when we're flushing things out, it's got to come out. And it's painful when it comes out. But once it comes out, then you can deal with it. And you're clean. And you're like, okay, well, let's put some good stuff back in there. Let's see how this is going to actually go. But until we get to that point, we still have to have a responsibility to take those chances, to go into the streets, to learn new things, to ask questions. I've had so many people, Keith, if you don't know, will send me direct messages, will try to call or say things on social or reach out and apologize. Which the first person who did it caught me off guard because I wasn't quite ready at that moment. Didn't know it was coming. It was very early. It was like everything happened and then boom. And I was like, oh, I thought we were talking about something else. But, oh, okay, thank you. Right? or from people who don't know what to do or don't know what to say. And I say, say you don't know what to do, you don't know what to say, and show your sincerity, and another person can accept that as opposed to coming across disingenuous.
If you don't know, ask. Right? There's no harm in asking. And if your question is genuine and comes from the heart, there isn't anyone, especially you, that would, right, that is going to get mad or angry or whatever, right? And just the simple fact of asking a question shows you care.
Yeah, definitely.
And also, I think it's you know, you and I have two completely different views of the world that are shaped by our experiences. Mm-hmm. And that's the one thing is, all of these people, you know, especially like yesterday, I saw something that absolutely mortified me. And it was, there was a protest going, peaceful protest going by. And there were people that were protesting the protest, and they did it by reenacting what happened to George Floyd. And in what, where does your head have to be that you would actually think that that is normal?
Right.
That is acceptable.
Well, it's not. And we're not in normal times. And keep, it brings me to the thoughts of people feel as though they can do anything.
Yes.
At any point in time. And stand in who they are. And I'm good with people revealing who they truly are. I'm good with that. Because then I know what to do with you.
It's absolutely shockingly amazing how much you can learn in the LinkedIn
and just,
next door just and Facebook comments section.
Just observe for a little. That's why I said in the beginning, it's quite amusing. Quite amusing. So let's talk about a little tech for a second too.
Uh-huh. Okay.
You know, I think, you know, Eddie's piece about reimagining, and the reason why I brought up Eddie is personal, of course, because we went to school together, and when he was at Morehouse, he's a couple classes ahead of me, but he was SGA president when I was at Spelman. And he was brilliant then, and he remains pushing and around where people will see and understand that it's, you know, you can't keep looking past what you're saying, right? And I'm hoping that people will make choices totally different. So Keith, when I was looking at the news, or as I always do, only in digital format, not news, right? I noticed that we talked about Black Tuesday, which happened on last Tuesday, which was the second.
Yeah, June 2nd.
Right? The second, but there were two entities that did something different. You tell us about one of them, and I'll tell you about the other. And these are tech companies.
These are tech companies. And the first one is one of my favorite companies on the whole planet, which is Microsoft.
And see, that's where we always differ, right? Because he knows my for them. But go ahead.
But I think, you know, reading the tea leaves, I guess, or seeing, I thought, you know, and you actually were the one that told me about it, but I thought Microsoft did it. I'm going to read a part of their statement on June 1. And it is, thank you for registering for the Microsoft Virtual AI Summit. The event was originally scheduled for tomorrow, June 2nd. In recognition of the important conversation taking place across America and beyond, we are postponing the event until June 23rd. This week, Microsoft is using its platform to elevate the voices of our Black and African American employees. We look forward to hosting the rescheduled Virtual AI Summit on June 23rd and having a productive dialogue on how AI can empower your organization. Thanks, Microsoft events team. It was a huge statement. Postponing that for however many weeks is an undertaking. What I liked about the statement when you first sent it to me was it was short, sweet, to the point, and that's where it stopped. Right? They were like, it's not time for us to speak. So we're just going to say this. We're going to get out of the way. So.
And that takes a lot of courage, risk, putting things in danger, as Baldwin says, reimagining, yeah. Right? As Dr. Glaude says, hard for me to say Dr. Glaude, but Eddie says, and saying, you know, it's okay. So that to me proves that there are people inside of Microsoft who are having relevant, timely conversation. Mm-hmm. And they are obviously in a position where they can pivot to making those decisions swiftly, as yes. opposed to being reactionary to it, or at least if you're reactionary to it, didn't know what was happening or going on, saying, hey, let's see how we can come together and make this happen. And it, to me, it's still another thing as it relates to, we're talking about two pandemics, the first being COVID, because it forced people to move swiftly and be more agile and nimble around all kinds of things. And it is my thought that the essence of that helps companies move a little more agile and swiftly when pandemics or emergencies or any types of things happen. So let me tell you about another one, Keith. It's South By. For those of you who don't know South By, South By Southwest takes place in Austin annually. On the same exact day, literally those emails came to me like back to back to back. And I was like, Keith, look. They said, in light of recent events around the deaths of George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, and Ahmaud Arbery, South by Southwest is taking part in the show must be paused tomorrow. Again, it's called the show must be paused as part of Blackout Tuesday. As a result, we are postponing the scheduled Rachel Ray conversation with Addie Broyles. As soon as this is rescheduled, we will let you know. At South by Southwest, we stand with the Black community and will continue to amplify the voices and ideas that will lead us to more equitable society. So these are two big, even though one's a tech company and one is quote unquote a festival or mm-hmm. event that takes place and has components of music and technology and culture along with it, right? It's still as big as the others and notorious for being very diverse groups of people who attend and are a part of the process. And this is the stand that both of them took on June 1st.
Yeah. And South By, you know, South by Southwest has changed the, you know, much like TED, you know, has changed the event industry, and people do look to them, you know, so hopefully this is something that other organizations, when they see someone like South by Southwest do it, that they know that they can sometimes take a stand. And I think people have to stop being afraid. And what I mean by that is, you know, if you look at Microsoft could have said, we don't want to say anything because we don't want to alienate some of our customers, mm-hmm. right? You know what? We're past that, right? You know what? If those are your customers, you probably don't want them anyway. You know, if these are people that are members of your association, do you want them? You know, part of being in the United States, which is, you know, land of the free, you know,
and the maybe.
we'll see. You know, but you have to make choices. Yes. You know, we made a choice as a company many, many years ago. Actually, I think it might actually be before I knew you. But we got an RFP. Right. And we would have got, I didn't know who the organization was at the time. So I responded to the RFP, whatever. We got it. And then I found out who the organization was. And I'm not going to say it's not important. But when I looked up the organization and I saw what they were about, we sat down and I said, I don't want to work with these people. And that was it, right? So sometimes you have to, you've got to make choices.
Yes, Keith. All money is not good money.
No. In fact, I would have felt dirty after that.
And it's and you have brown children. You have a brown child.
Yes, I do.
What would you say to your child? I mean, you know, it's like it is the antithesis to me of what's happening is that you have to be cognizant of how your decisions affect life.
Yeah.
Just as simple as your decisions affect life. And what can we do? People are like, well, Tess, what can I do? And the best thing you need to do is be authentic and change and ask questions around what can I do to choose? If I've always chosen people who look like me, can I consciously choose to work with and do things with other people who don't look like me?
Yeah.
Period. And Keith, I know we go down rabbit holes, but something that annoyed me to no end is that one of our organizations I'm going to take it higher than one of our organizations. The thing that annoyed me the most about all of this is when people sit up here and talk about diversity and inclusion, which has to me bastardized the message. Mm-hmm. Because it is this that has just happened, the second pandemic that we're talking about institutional racism or systemic racism as well, is not about diversity as it relates to all of the communities that fall under diversity that have gotten. This is a Black issue, and this is about Black people.
Yes, you're right.
It's not about people of color. It's about Black people.
No, and you're right. And you know, and again, it's about education, right? And so the smart people listen, right? The smart people listen to you and to others, right? And you know, and that's why I try not to say anything until I understand a situation, right? So I don't ask questions, you know, but I love to just sit back and kind of listen to a conversation and kind of see where things are and then form my opinion. But I think what so many organizations don't understand is it's okay to say that this is about Black people, African American people. It's not about these other groups. They don't count any less.
No, but that's not what we're talking about right now. That's just not the conversation for today.
It's about this, right? it's not about all the other different colors of post-it notes. It's about this post-it note.
Exactly. And that's the part that unnerves me. And, well, you know, I clearly Black woman. I don't have a problem calling me Black woman. I have a problem calling African-American person. I don't have a problem about that. You're a white man. I don't have a problem calling white man because that's exactly who you are. If I call you out of your name, your color, your race, that's a whole other challenge. But let's just say how we can help and make decisions that are about equity. And equity means not necessarily equality, but equity means you have a stake in it.
Yes.
Some people might need to go back to the dictionary on what the word equity means. Because there's diversity, inclusion, and there's equity. Equity means I have a stake in it. Quality is certain is a whole another conversation.
So. Yeah, the way that I've been looking at things lately is, especially when it comes to this, is if someone is coming after you, I will stand in front of you, right?
Yes.
Other than that, I will stand behind you and walk with you. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. It does. And people, and it's, I think also what people don't realize is you can do it your own way. So keep telling everybody about Ben and Jerry's and what was their way.
Okay.
So you don't have to be very cookie cutter, right? You don't have to be cookie cutter in your,
no, you don't.
The way that you do it. Matter of fact, someone talked to just yesterday, she actually had to say she's in so much angst. And that's why I said my statement about angst. She's so fearful that she may say the wrong thing. And I was like, just say it. Say what have you? She said, "Is it okay to say Black?" Yes.
Yeah.
That's what it's fine. Well, not a problem. It's just when you're coming in or you're approaching a situation, is if you know, or if you're going to come to me and say, "Well, there's a lot of white guilt out there, Keith,"
sure.
And they come and people are coming from the standpoint of, "I can fix you." Don't come for me. You can say you have resources that you would like to share, and you admit that you have not been good with your resources and you make decisions with them differently in the past, but you would like to do something differently with those resources now. and you want to know how, and you want to ask me how. Don't tell me, ask me how. Because yeah. then you'd be looked at as very self-serving, and you have a hidden agenda. Whereas if you come authentically, like you would to anybody else, I got green money over here. You have a program. I'm interested in listening how I can fund your program. Simple.
Yeah.
Or, you know what? Let's see how we can merge. Let's see how we can collaborate. Let's see how we can make consortiums, right? It's this new idea of partnership. And again, that dangerous area that Baldwin talked about and reimagining like Eddie did. Yeah. Reimagining what this can look like. Because
yeah.
it's not going to be the same as you've done it before. And that requires communication and thought and talking and technology to be able to help you move through it smoothly. Yes. Simple.
And I'm going to circle it back to the Ben and Jerry's thing. I met Ben. We did an event where he was actually a speaker. And I got to sit with him for 1 hour in the green room. Waiting for him.
I love the green room conversation.
Smartest, one of the smartest individuals I have ever met in my life.
Besides me?
He was smart. He was funny. Good view of the world, right? It's Ben and Jerry's, for heaven's sake. When they sold Unilever owns the big company, owns Ben and Jerry's now. And when they sold Ben and Jerry's to Unilever, the thing was that Ben and Jerry's got to stay independent. They got to still have they could go whatever way they wanted to go with statements and things like that. And Unilever said, cool, whatever. But I find it funny because Ben and Jerry's, we were talking about the statement that they made on the BLM protest. And I pulled it up and what we found was they've actually made two statements. And this is how slowly things change. They have a statement on October 6th of 2016 that says, why Black Lives Matter. Now you jump forward 4 years, and now it is silence is not an option, right?
Silence is not an option. So we went from Black Lives Matter to silence is not an option.
Yes,
so that's an evolution.
Yeah. And I have a theory, and I am not a scientist, and I do not play one on TV, nor did I sleep at a Holiday Inn Express last night. but I have a theory. My theory is, okay, COVID hit, right? You know, these other things have happened in the past, but people have busy day-to-day lives, right? You know, you're trying to pay your rent. You know, you've got two folks that have to work four jobs to afford their rent. So you see things on television and they anger you and you will put something on Facebook, but you have to go do your thing, right?
Right.
Because eating is eating. I think that we had a perfect storm of COVID and George Floyd. And I think what happened was everybody has been at home. You can't go out. You can't do anything. You can't interact in public. And this happened. And now people they're afraid, they're angry, and they finally said, it's freaking enough.
Yeah. Because their attention was there.
Yes.
They had the time to be there, right? Yes. Everything drove everyone here. So they could see it and it could be amplified.
I agree.
Perfect storm.
And their anger over that trumped, no pun intended, their fear of COVID.
Yep.
And they were finally
they were walking out, doing all kinds of different things. And that's why people have to be very careful and cognizant of human behavior and what energy is like. Well, here in the Northern Lights, energy, because it's all the energy around that anger they redirect it and it supersedes. It's almost like when you go into a state of fear and you don't see anything else, you could be cut and scraped and bruised. You don't even feel that because your endorphins are moving so high. Your adrenaline is running so high. That's what it is. Same thing.
You know, it's like that mom that flips over the car that landed on her kid, right?
Right, exactly. Simple. It's real simple. Or best case I know of, which I never did this, is everyone knows this. that a woman decides to have more than one child because they realize that the pain that they were in when they had the child, it just miraculously went away. They don't have a memory of that because it's gone, or else they mm-hmm. won't do it again.
Okay. I'm circling us back to Ben and Jerry's.
You can go. Go on.
Here's the thing, and this is where I think associations, and I think our audience needs to understand something. Ben and Jerry's knows their audience, and they don't care about anybody else. And so they put these statements out. And Erica Napolitano is an author. I believe now she lives in California, and she's a comedian now, I think. But she wrote a book a few years ago that was called The Power of Unpopular. And basically in it, it said, in order to be popular and in order to be successful, you have to have a certain segment of the population that doesn't like you. Pepsi? All the Coke people hate Pepsi, right? Coke, all the Pepsi people, right? You get the point. Ben and Jerry's knows that their audience are hippies, progressive, left-leaning, cool folk who love all folk, right? And so they know, but sometimes you have to take those stands, right? And if you're an association, you can take that stand. And if a certain segment of the population doesn't like it, screw them.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say yesterday. I was on a webinar yesterday, and I'm not mentioning any of them. And there was this person who came from Big Brand and did events, and she did a phenomenal job explaining all of the things that they have done throughout time. And she had a wonderful backdrop that said, I'm not going to repeat what it said, but it was in support of the movement. And this, she was the only person of color on that program. She's a Black woman, but she was the only person. But nonetheless, I kept trying to write in a question, and I couldn't formulate it in short form. But it is that, why is it that we have to let these big brands make these statements before we move and do something? We talked about Microsoft, which is huge, South by Southwest, which is a huge brand. Now good we're point. Talking about Big Ben. Ben and Jerry's, right?
Like that big
what thing. Why are these companies and these organizations just so slow?
I don't know.
Just so slow. When they're smaller, so they could be more nimble and agile to come to conclusions about things easy.
Yeah.
Easy. So to wrap everything up for the day, Keith, I'd like you to have some closing comment, and I'll have one as well.
Mine is very simple, and it's my philosophy on how to live your life. Don't be an ass. That's it.
Just don't be an ass.
You know? Try not to anyway. And it's okay. It's okay to change, right? If you grew up in a family that was, that your parents were racist and it's bled down to you a little bit, right? But you see all this and you think, hey, I see this and I kind of agree with it. It's okay to change. It's okay to change. And it's okay for someone like that to walk up to you and say, hey, you know what? My whole life, this is what I heard and that is what I understood, but now I'm seeing all these people and I'm changing my mind. You would probably smile at them and go, good, glad to have you aboard. Right? Yeah. It's okay to become something new. I am not the person now that I was when I was in my early 20s, right? I'm not the two people are not even remotely close because I have tried to become a better person along the way.
Right, exactly.
You know, I don't understand people that will not change.
I'm a firm believer that people choose their way. And even when they think they don't choose their way, their subconscious chooses their way for them on their behalf, what they're doing consciously.
Yes.
This is the psych major part of me, being the daughter of a social worker. I understand human behavior. So until you can come to grips with the fact that we've all made choices and done things that we may not be comfortable with, that's okay. Remember, these two pandemics have changed our entire existence. Mm-hmm. So you have the ability to choose again. You have the ability to do it different. If you did it different one way, 1 second, there's the next second. People say it's a new day, but I say it's a new second. It's a new moment.
Every second of the day, you face a fork in the road.
Absolutely. And I'm going to close by reiterating the quote that Dr. Eric Laude Jr. said earlier. And this is just a portion of it, Keith. And it is, we have to confront the ugliness of who we are and who we have been so we can imagine ourselves otherwise.